You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide. And here we are, St. Patrick's weekend, St. Patrick's Day. And you know, it is great to welcome not only somebody who has, you know, the greatest job, if you're talking about worldwide job, Niall Gibbons, world CEO of, you know, of Tourism Ireland, IrishIreland.com. But let me welcome, you know, a friend, and somebody we've known as a friend, going back so many years. Let me welcome Niall Gibbons.
Well, hello, Adrian, and a very happy St. Patrick's weekend to you and to all your listeners. Lovely to be back in the United States again in real life. Talking to everybody about tourism and Ireland, and this is the week to do it. It's been an amazing week so far.
You know, it has to bring us back, though, to the last St. Patrick's Day live program in New York, where we thought we had a parade coming up. We thought we had so many distinguished visitors coming from Ireland, and by the next morning that had all changed.
Indeed, I remember it well. We had our Northern Ireland Minister, Diane Dodds, over.
That's right.
We had a few of our Northern Ireland industry over. You did an interview in this very office, and I think that was around the 10th of March, maybe,
yes,
or thereabouts, and we did a few events here in New York, and we headed to Washington, D.C., and lo and behold, within the space of 4 or 5 days, there was a presidential ban on travel, and we're all on the plane on the way home.
You know, it's not like we didn't have enough notice, but for some reason, we thought, because we were Irish, and we are Irish, and from Irish backgrounds, that nobody would have the cheek to cancel out St. Patrick's Day. I mean, whatever you want to do the day after, that's fine. We were taken on the hop, and I think that if we look back on it, somehow we thought, you know, that no, we can't do this. Listen, that's like cancelling Christmas Day. You can't do it. And but it was all for good reason, and it was a huge disappointment, not only to us, but to those who had, you know, invested heavily, you know, Irish bars, Irish pubs, that had really, you know, found themselves in a mess because all of the, you know, all of the deliveries and all of their stock was there, and it was pretty terrible, really. But you know, we've overcome. Now, most people went into, you know, hibernation immediately after that, and you, if I may say so, acted like it was business as usual. You were going from post to pillar. Tell us about, you know, the your world travels, and I don't know how far back you'd like to go, but promoting tourism worldwide became, you know, something that I think your predecessors felt the world seemed to be much smaller before you came along.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for that. I mean, I started off in Tourism Ireland 21 years ago. I came in after 9/11 and foot and mouth, which were traumatic years back at home for tourism. Yeah, it affected the market here in the United States, but it also had global impacts as well. For example, you know, Asian travel into Europe. Foot and mouth in Britain caused problems with travel from Britain into Ireland, yeah. And it was a very difficult and uncertain time for the industry. But you know, look, I think, you know, what Ireland was good at was pulling together in times of difficulty, and we saw great growth in the tourism industry up until around 2006 when we had the Ryder Cup, a great year. And then, you know, by 2008, you could see the strains that were happening within the banking system, the global financial crisis, and you could see this becomes a very cyclical type of business. And when I was appointed chief executive in 2009, I remember coming out doing radio, yeah, interviews here, and the US market had been in decline, but, you know, Everyone pulled together. We worked along with the air carriers, with the trade and the tour operators here, with the media, and there was such a positive sense about Ireland that it wasn't hard to galvanise the positivity. Mm-hmm. And this was the market where, around the time the gathering was launched, we could really feel a sense of momentum coming when people were asked to come home. Airlines start to increase connectivity again, and we had a great run then from, you know, about 2012 onwards.
Mm-hmm.
We had policy initiatives introduced like reduction in VAT or sales tax,
right.
Abolition of air travel tax, which made, you know, getting to Ireland sure. easier. And I think then we went through a great period up to about 2019 of very, very strong growth. We talked 10 years ago about the day maybe when the US market would have 1 million visitors spending $1 billion, and
yes.
by 2019 we had almost 2 million visitors spending $2 billion, and a phenomenal export industry that the government really recognised. That being said, I don't think there's anything like COVID, and nothing could have prepared us for it either. And I think there's something within the human spirit that finds it hard to accept that we can shut everything down. Remember, the number of cases were very, very small at that time,
yeah.
but there was just a lot of fear and a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, the measures in hindsight were taken for the right reasons. Everyone was doing yeah. their best. And, you know, government put huge support behind the tourism industry in Ireland to make sure it was able to sustain itself. We thought we'd be back in business in 2 months in 2020, but this is much more prolonged. And I was at the Irish Hotels Federation conference in Killarney last week. And as I looked around the audience and a panel conversation, I just made the observation that if we didn't get the support from government that we got over the 3 years, a lot of us would not have been in the room. Mm-hmm. However, they're nearly all in the room, having gone through a traumatic time for all their staff. But there was payroll supports, there was VAT supports, tax warehousing, rates relief. So all those measures individually added up to survival. And the great news is that here we are in 2023, using the words back of the bang, a very strong performance in the last half of 22 when we finally opened. Remember, the requirement to test here was still in place till mid-May, but after that was lifted, we saw an absolute skyrocketing of demand from this market into Ireland, and thankfully that's continued into 2023, and no doubt it's going to continue for years to come.
Now, on a point of personal privilege, I want to, to thank you for being a nudge for several years when you came over here. You were saying, by the way, what do you do with your archives, with your shows, your tapings, whatever? And I would... reaction, I'm going to get around to that someday. But the someday has come. Finally, I think we have most of the programs going back now more than 50 years, 53 coming. This is our 53rd. But we found most of them. And they would have been fully archived and digitized were it not again for, so we're running a year behind, but I want to thank you for that, particularly when we can take, in the case of yourself going back some, what is it, 17 years, where we can track your prediction of numbers that seemed totally unreal at the time in terms of, traffic and tourism from North America.
It's funny, I think I was first on the show on St. Patrick's Day in 2006. I think it was yourself, and was it John Deary that would have been?
Oh, yes, John. Yes,
and,
indeed.
It was real hullabaloo scenes around the studio on St. Patrick's Day. Frank McCourt was there. Tim O'Connor was the Consul General.
Yeah.
Martin Cullen was the minister that attended around that time. And yeah. we had a chat for about 5 minutes. I don't think I had a lot to say, but it was a great first effort. But I know we've been on the show many times. But I'm so glad that you got those records digitized, because I did make the observation that this is a conversation about the relationship between two of the most important partners in the world, the United States and Ireland, and the influence that the show has on it. It generates conversation and people are talking, and I think when you put that together over half a century, it's a modern discourse on the relationship, which is really important in the current age, because it's changing all the time.
Well, actually, when you brought it up first, I thought perhaps maybe you'd forget about it and go away. And in hindsight, again, I want to say on a personal level, thank you for that, and indeed for your friendship through the years. Can you bring us to, you know, the point where it looked like there was no stopping the growth each year? And again, for that, just as COVID was coming along, the sky was the limit, and you didn't have to hope anymore. The tourism from North America was at its highest, and you wanted it to be even higher still. Bring us to that period where, you know, Ireland was at saturation point.
I think if you go back to around 2018, 2019, we saw a phenomenal momentum. We were out here a number of times. The generation of goodwill towards Ireland was strong. I mean, traditional gateways like Boston, New York, Chicago were very important, but a lot of the growth that we were seeing was from places like Texas, California, southern states. So there's an emergence of a new customer for Ireland. And to put tourism in perspective as an export, as an economic driver, back in 2019, we welcomed 11.3 million visitors to the island of Ireland. And the island as a whole is about a 7 million population, so that's almost 1.5 times the number of people that live there. It supported 325,000 jobs. That's about 10% of total employment. And what's important about those jobs is they're not just based in big places like Dublin or Cork or Belfast. It's every small rural town and village around the old island of Ireland. And it's really important to rural communities, the tourism industry, not just during the summer, but also during winter months as we try to extend the season. So that's how strong things got. It fell off a cliff. We were all wondering when we could start climbing up again. And we reckon last year, 2022, we probably recovered about 75% of our 2019 business. And given that we couldn't welcome anyone in the first quarter of the year with Omicron, it's been a very good recovery, and we'll see that get into the 80% of 2019 levels again. It's probably going to be maybe end 25 by the time we're back to the heady days of 2019, what we call in real terms, allowing for inflation, because that's a factor that we didn't have in the latter 10 years. But still, the air connectivity has been a huge part of that as well. I'm just come back from the West Coast in LA and San Francisco, where we just opened a new office now, and really optimistic for, you know, business from that side of the United States. 26% of our business comes from the west of the USA, and we've got air connectivity now with Aer Lingus into San Francisco, into LA, and also into Seattle. So it's great to have that in addition to all the places that we traditionally have had on the East Coast.
You know, my guest friends, Niall Gibbons, CEO of Tourism Ireland Worldwide. I want to, again, go back to that idea which you rolled out about the gathering and what that would, you know, mean in terms of tourism to our... Can you spell that one out from the beginning? What gathering? And what did you have in mind there to begin with?
Yeah, the gathering, I mean, I have to admit, it wasn't my concept. There are some friends of ours, in our colleagues and friends in our sister agency, Fulch Ireland. One individual called John Kincannon was a big driver behind it as well. The then Minister for Tourism was Leo Varadkar. He was very keen on the idea, and it was a very simple idea of really trying to energise a reconnection between Ireland and the diaspora around the globe and invite people to come home. It wasn't a big money marketing campaign, it was just a simple idea about reconnection in times of trouble, and that's why it worked, I think, because we got people at home to ask, and when people were asked, they were dying to help. And when you come out to markets like this, there was an instantaneous feeling of wanting to be part of a movement, and it was easy to get doors opened. And not just markets like here, where you're over 30 million people who have Irish-American connections. You know, you've got about 5 million in Canada, about 6 million in the UK, about 5 million in Australia. And there are nooks and crannies all over the world where you've got diaspora. Argentina even had a movement of people out from the Midlands in the 1840s. So they were everywhere. and people just responded to this. So you had all sorts of quirky things going on, like redhead festivals and left-handed festivals, and people in places like Roscommon and Mayo and Clare inviting their family and friends home. And I think just people, after several years of global financial crisis, wanted a good story and they wanted a reason to have a party. So the simplicity was in the ask.
Yes. And I don't know whether part of the plan was that this would have legs. Legs in the sense that still family gatherings, that the trend took off. It wasn't a once-off. That, you know, to this day, so many people find reasons to go to Ireland and to, you know, to visit Ireland. And again, I think that the impetus there was the gathering.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think what it did was renewed connections, which is always good. I mean, sometimes you need to be jolted into doing that. And there is a plan, I mean, it's in the programme for government to have not a gathering Mark II, but some sort of an invitation, and the concept has been discussed back in Ireland at the moment. We'll see what shape that might take. But in addition to that, what we have seen is a trend over the last number of years of a bigger increase in interest in genealogy. And the records now are getting better all the time. And particularly during COVID, one of the trends we found was that, you know, when people are stuck at home and when people are in times of crisis, they tend to reach for their past. And what we have found now is that with the records being much better than they were before, people are not only reaching into their past, but they're also then deciding that they want to come home and actually reconnect. I had the opposite journey here. I was able to trace relations of mine that ended up in Ellis Island in 1910. I found them then in Philadelphia and Manhattan and settling in New Jersey. And I met my second cousins last year for the first time. And my elderly aunts, who were in their 80s, were thrilled because their mother never spoke about what had happened. It was just part of the tradition. And Mayo, they were not well off, and this was a sign maybe of failure that people left. But I think the opportunity to reconnect with people that you didn't know or your family is a very powerful motivator. And what we're seeing on the other side is people from this part of the world now starting to find their second cousins in places like Clare or Kerry or Mayo, Donegal, places that lost a lot of their populations. And it's a very emotional scene. I was talking to one person in California last week who did come home, met their second cousins, and they have relations in Galway. But to actually go to the homestead that the family left maybe back in 1850 is a very emotional and powerful thing. And I use the term, it's a great hobby to be chasing the living as opposed to chasing the dead. In the past, it was about visiting the gravestones and the headstones. But when you actually find the descendants and the relatives of those people, it's very rewarding and very enriching. And that is one big trend that's emerged in a post-COVID world.
And I don't know how many new relatives, cousins, generations of cousins you met, but they would walk up to you. It seemed like every time you made a trip, or most times, you know, somebody would surface to claim relationship with you. And they turned out to be genuine. It wasn't like, you know, some people say, oh, my grandmother was from Cove. No, not from Cove, left from Cove. But you actually came across great number of your own relatives, you know, who came at one point or another, whose ancestors came. And they're still very proud of their Irishness. And refer to it.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been lucky enough to be able to travel the globe. And I think one thing that the Irish have is a sense of curiosity, that they're always asking questions, and I'm always asking questions. But there have been many stories, but there was one funny one. I won't tell you the whole story now, but I was in London doing an interview on CNN television, and before I went on, a lady approached me to ask me who I was and if I was the guy from Tourism Ireland, because her mother was a Gibbons from Mayo, as my father was. And when I asked the questions about where in Mayo and Lewisburg and Caroniski and everything, it transpired by the following day, we found out that our grandfathers were brothers and that we were second cousins. So how small a world is that? Like, here's a lady now working in London, and, you know, here we are meeting 110 years after our grandfathers were, you know, living in Lewisburg and Mayo. And what a connection to make. And there's been many others like that around the globe, where their cousins are just connections by asking questions. And that's something that the Irish have a unique, I think, ability to do.
Yes, and you know, you're talking about, you know, several generations, and perhaps something which we did not expect was that young people, you know, from once they have graduated, and they're instantly, if they didn't get a chance to visit Ireland before, that becomes top of the list for them.
Yeah, very much so. And the other thing we're seeing in that space from a business perspective is intergenerational travel now,
yeah,
where you know, people have made the connections, they've dug a bit deeper, and now it's time to go. But what you sometimes find now is that the grandparents are leading the charge, say, look, we're going to go back to Ireland, but they'll bring their children and their grandchildren with them as well. And we're, yeah, seeing that in hotels, and saying that we're now seeing three generations of the one family coming over for that once-in-a-lifetime trip.
My guest friends, Niall Gibbons, who I particularly like to refer to as a Mayo man, you know, in my own case, with the wave of immigration at the end of the 50s, Mayo home county was kind of teeming out for a number of reasons, and I still blame my family, you know, my siblings, for, you know, being cowardly and just immigrating to Dublin because they didn't trust a boat or an airplane. They don't find that actually very funny, but a great number of people in the west of Ireland, including your own, you know, a father and that generation, did, in fact, leave areas like Lewisburg and all over the county and wound up in Dublin. Those who didn't overshoot Dublin and wind up in London or places like that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, my dad was from Mayo, my mum was from Roscommon, and they came to Dublin in the 1960s, and that's where I am now. And you're right, there was a whole economic migration, there were jobs, there was a livelihood to be made. A lot of other people ended up over in you know, the UK. I mean, mm-hmm. Huge Mayo diaspora in Chicago. I mean, there's certain places where there's pockets of them around the place, Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting, it's an example of a county. There are several counties in Ireland, Mayo is certainly one of them, where there's still a very strong, lively connection and network of people who've remained connected. That's very, very clear. I think the county itself, Mayo, does great work in maintaining those connections as best they can. With the records that are there, they're much better. And I've met a lot of people from, you know, Mayo connections. Even today, we were just with Bill Byrne earlier on from Aer Lingus,
sure. Yeah.
From Chicago, Mayo connections. Bill McLaughlin, Mr. Philadelphia,
yes.
The Chamber of Commerce, another Mayo guy as well. So they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And there are other counties too. I mean, Kerry, South Clare,
yeah.
And that. But Mayo, I think it's probably the one that lost the most amount of people around that period from the 1850s onwards. And, you know, you've got a big Mayo association here in New York as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those things are really important because they keep people connected.
Also, I think there is something that maybe it's not new, but we were slow to acknowledge that, you know, a huge number of people through the years who had business in Ireland, you know, got on a plane, they went over, did their business, and came back. I think Ireland must hold the record for those who have business reasons to go to Ireland, but then they're not that fast in making the U-turn or coming back. Because Ireland has a lot to offer, you know, obviously, and the tourism factor, yeah, it may be listed as a business trip, but a lot of these CEOs and those who are traveling, they wind up staying in Ireland. God,
yeah.
There's 100, maybe 1,000 reasons to stay in Ireland, regardless of what, you know, brings you there in the first place.
Yeah, and it's an aspect of tourism that doesn't get a lot of airtime sometimes. You refer to it as business tourism.
Yeah.
People who may be coming over for a conference, for an event, for a business meeting, and we'll tag on them a bit of time at the end, or they might invite their spouse over. And people coming over for business reasons would tend to spend 4 times more than a leisure tourist. They'll probably stay in better hotels, they'll probably hire a car, or they might have a chauffeur car, they'll probably play around at golf. So it's a really important aspect of our mix. People coming for reasons of business tourism will spend not far off $1 billion when they're in Ireland. So a big employer.
Big.
But the idea there is that, you know, if you can convince them, you have people who do this, by the way, professionally, to get companies to organise their event or their business meeting in Ireland. There's really good spin-off business that comes from that, and the feedback is universally positive as well. We'll have a good example of it coming up actually now. It's more on the sports side, but Navy will play Notre Dame later on this year in Dublin. We expect nearly 40,000 people will travel for that. So they're taking the game, but what they'll also do afterwards is they'll stay on, they'll do a bit of touring around, and that's good. And I know that, I mean, the hope is that there'll be a game every year for the next 4 years as well. And it's really, really positive from a tourism perspective, because the spin-off from those is absolutely enormous, and it builds the relationship for the next generation too.
This is a bittersweet interview we're having with you. A good part of us, of course, would want to wish you well, and figure that, you know, having now Gibbons in retirement is something it'll take us a long time to get used to. But that's so, yes, it's great that you're at the point where you can retire, but you are going to be missed tremendously throughout the world with your travels and in the tourism sector. If you were to just give us, you know, a recap of some of the events or some of the places or some of the you know, initiatives that you introduced into tourism, if we had another few hours, I suppose you could keep going, but do any of them just jump to mind?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that jump to mind. I mean, it's all part of a journey. When I came in as chief executive in 2009, we had a campaign called Go Where Ireland Takes You that moved into Jump Into Ireland. We had The Gathering, we had Fill Your Heart With Ireland, we had the Green Button campaign. Next month, in April, we'll be launching a new What Fills Your Heart With Ireland. So it's an evolution of a journey. I mean, there's no big bang solution to, you know, what we're trying to do here. It's a journey of listening to our customers, making sure that Ireland remains connected with the United States, making sure the travel trade, companies like CIE International and others who sell so well in the marketplace here, are attuned to what our customers are saying as well. And we're listening to what their customers are saying. That's what makes it work, and that's how we can adapt in terms of our success. I think over the years, and it's an important point to make as well, as we approach the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, it's important to bear in mind that Tourism Ireland was born out of that agreement. So what used to be done separately by the Irish Tourist Board and Northern Ireland Tourist Board, we now do as one. And it's just a very good example of where compromise and goodwill can build a better future for all of us. And we met recently with George Mitchell, Senator George Mitchell, who was over holidays last year, and I've been in touch with him over the last number of years. And he came to our staff conference, and he put those days 25 years ago in great perspective when he said, look, I have 700 days of failure and one day of success. But on the back of that, we've had 25 years of success. And if you look at what's happened in Northern Ireland particularly, they've seen a renaissance and a transformation in their tourism economy, which has been a contributor to employment and growth and stability in society. And that's always the big picture to remember. The campaigns are just part of the journey, but it's only when you look back over a quarter of a century you start to realise that people's lives are much better.
Yeah. Is there a sense, you know, this interview is getting bordering on being sentimental at this point, so I just want to see how we can throw a dagger into it. What is, and is there a reaction from people who have, you know, the fantasy of Ireland as being a Chernanog something, you know, that is, you know, next to paradise and heaven, and who go to Ireland and say, wait a minute, I thought we were going to see the thatched cottage, and I thought that we were, you know, going to see the farms, and I thought that the image of where my ancestors came from, the hell is going on here? A modern Ireland, a hugely modern Ireland, is somehow able to retain some of the traditions, and definitely, if not a recreation, because it never changed. Take places like the Wild Atlantic Way, Ireland's Ancient East, and so many places. Yeah, they're there, but for people who go and stick to the highways, that campaign of saying, wait a minute, you're choosing to do this, but Ireland still has, a great display of the traditions and whatever. Is there a realization, or is it a minority of people who say, who come back and say, no, I thought now that I would find more of what I, grew up with and listening and hearing, where our people came from.
I thought for a minute when you mentioned throwing a dagger into the equation, you were going to mention Mayo winning the All-Ireland.
No, I know.
That wasn't too bad a question.
I knew you were holding that dagger yourself.
But it is a very good question you ask. I mean, it is the challenge you always have to, how do you balance the traditional versus the contemporary? And, Ireland has changed a lot over the last 50 years. I mean, 50 years members of the European Union this year, and the Ireland that I grew up in is a far more better place now. But that being said, if you're a tourist, what are the things that people look for when they're coming on their holidays? They're not looking for the politics or anything like that.
Yes.
The three things that stand out, and this is what our customers say to us all the time, landscape is one. So you take a film like The Banshees of Inisherin, and it ticks all those boxes. I mean, the landscape is stunning. Secondly, Irish culture, which has various expressions. That could be river dance, it could be going to see a show in the Abbey, it can be many things. But above all, it's the people, and that's the standout thing, and that's what makes people's memories. That's what they're looking for, is to create memories and holidays. And someone made a very good summarized it for me very well recently when they said the difference between Ireland and other destinations when it comes to your holidays or your vacation is that in many countries around the world, Western countries, the conversation starts when you get out of the lift and they say, have a nice day, sir.
Yeah.
And in Ireland, the conversation starts when they get into the lift. How are you? It's lovely to see you. You're back. We have been here before. How many days are you staying? Yeah. Oh, your name is Flannelly. Right, where are you from? Galway. Oh, do you know such a... And these are the journeys that people like that level of curiosity, and they like the engagement, and they like the sense that they've been looked after and minded. And that's the most important thing. Ireland is going to continue to change. Every country is. I mean, the danger, I suppose, for a lot of destinations in the world, not just Ireland, is that the world starts to become much more homogenised. As you walk down the high street, the shops are the same, so to speak. So how do you get that bit of differentiation? And that'll be a key thing as we head into the future.
Okay, since you already used the dagger with Mayo, bringing, the Sam Maguire, by the way, friends, is the ultimate... That's your Super Bowl, and that is everything we hold near and dear here. This is in Ireland, in football, the Sam Maguire Cup is one that before Gibbons and company were born, Mayo did win the All-Ireland final. And from that day to this, we've been holding off. We could have done it, but, we have the reputation of, and Mayo, of, being great losers. And that is about to change. But Niall Gibbons has been jinxing it for as long as I know him by talking about bringing the Sam Maguire back to Mayo.
Well, it could be my stepping down from Tourism Ireland. The tonic that Mayo needed, and they could come roaring back now at the end of August with the Sam Maguire, and there'd be bonfires lit across the west of Ireland.
Niall Gibbons, again, you are definitely going to be missed, but I can tell you that your legacy does not make the replacement, whoever that may be, an easy job. You have raised the bar, and if there is somebody who somehow over what is now 21 years, somebody who actually put into practice 24/7, I don't know if they will exist, but you have loved every minute of it. You would have to.
I think it's the best job in the world. I've been very lucky and very fortunate to have done the things that I've done. And, you know, people use the phrase big shoes to fill. Look, it's important to remember I walk out of my own shoes, and whoever comes in and picks up the bat, I no doubt will do a great job. I mean, it's a job that's sort of infectious. It takes you over to some extent. And my predecessor, Paul O'Toole, did an amazing job as well. And we're very fortunate within Tourism Ireland to have an amazing team of people around the globe. Alison Metcalf runs our North American operation, yes, as you know well. And we have 21 markets across the globe that we deal in. And I'm lucky to be able to work with such a committed and motivated bunch of people, and that makes my job an awful lot easier.
One of the benefits that we have beyond many others is that, you know, we have developed, both Anya Sheridan and myself have developed a great friendship with you, and that's going to last. Not only is it going to last, but we look forward to it and wish you all the luck in the world, you know, in your retirement. And we won't go as far as asking you what are you going to do now. I think it's time that your good wife, Marion, would take over and tell you for a change what you should be doing.
Well, we won't get into that one on air, if you don't mind. We, ironically, we met on St. Patrick's Day 32 years ago and still rocking on. So, but thank you for your friendship and support over the years. I'm not saying goodbye on these occasions. There is a new chapter to my career in life that will become apparent in due course. But I've loved to be able to do what I've done. It's always been great to come on your show over the years. And it's a great reflection for me to be able to sit down and discuss some of these things today, because it's only when you have a chat about what's been going on for the past, it makes it even more fulfilling. So thank you very much for all the support that you, Anya, have shown me over the years. It's great to be here, and we'll keep in touch.
Thank you, and indeed, friends, we're delighted to have not only our friend Niall Gibbons, but also able to address some of the reasons why, you know, the legacy that he leaves, you know, is remarkable. And you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com.